Vijnana Dharma, Artha and Kama. Also, various books upon the subject of Dharma, Artha and Kama. Also, rules for the conduct of mankind. Also, histories and discourses with various Shrutis, all of which, having been seen by the Rishi Vyas, are here in due order, mentioned as a specimen of the book. Can you still hear back there? Nobody can hear. I don't know what to do. Can we have, not necessarily right now, but have somebody go over and ask that mutt that, you know, we appreciate their kirtan, but kindly don't face the speaker this direction. You know what I'm saying? Because, believe it or not, we are also doing bhajan here, and we can't do our bhajan because they expect that their bhajan's more important than ours. So someone should go mention to them. So what to do? You have a speaker. You have? Yeah. Because, I mean, it's annoying between the tractor and this, then you can't get anything done. Okay, so it's trying to explain that the Mahabharata then has all the knowledge of the Vedic literatures within it. Right, so here it mentions the threefold: the Vedas themselves, which is the body of knowledge; yoga means your application of this in understanding how to connect yourself with the Supreme Lord; and then dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These are the different important elements of human life. So you have the scriptures themselves and all the body of knowledge. You have how to apply that body of knowledge into one's life in all aspects. And yoga means then it's connected to the Supreme. Does that make sense? So Shastra is the basis. Then on top of Shastra, then that has to be applied. So its application has to connect us to the Lord, but it must be able to be applied in our own personal life. Right? Does that make sense? So these three, that's why it says these three bodies of knowledge. So that's what this deals with. And then the various breakdowns of this Dharma, Artha, and Kama, this is then so many details are given. Yeah, and then histories and discourses. So histories will mean what somebody did. Discourses will mean discussions between various sages and that. And so all that, which is the Vedic literature, has been condensed down into this literature. Can you still hear or no? Yeah, now you can hear. Okay. The Rishi Vyasa published this mass of knowledge in both a detailed and abridged form. It is the wish of the learned in the world to possess the details and the abridgment. Right? So we want both. Some people just want to know the essence also, don't want to know anything else. Those who are habituated to email, they can't tolerate detail. It is beyond the scope of their intellectual ability. Because if you have 100 emails a day, what detail you can get into, right? And there are those who just get into detail, but it's a difficulty for them to handle the abridgment. But the abridgment, then it shows you what is the essence. And the detail shows you what is the vastness or broadness of the application of that detail, right? Does that make sense? Yes, no? So we need to have both. So that's why you'll see the scriptures always give an abridgment first, then after the abridgment, then they will expand that into the detail, right? That's further what we said we were doing before. You give the essence, then you expand, so how much detail is needed, how much detail people can absorb, that much you go, right? But if they don't know the abridgment, they won't know what the essence is. They won't catch the common point. Does that make sense? Okay. Some read the Bharata beginning with the initial mantra, invocation, means like we're doing. Others with the story of Astika. That means you'll start with, Astika is the whole, how do you say? The beginning of the snake sacrifice, right? The snakes are cursed, and by their mother, and then there's a snake sacrifice that they're cursed that they'll be killed in, and Astika is born to stop the snake sacrifice. So the whole history of Astika and the snakes being cursed, some start at that point. Chachi has a question? No. Okay. Others with Uparichara. Well, some brahmanas study the whole. Uparichara Vasu means he's like the grandfather of Maharaj Shantanu. Right? Generally, most you see in our, when devotees discuss, it generally starts there, because that's where the real story of the Pandavas starts, right? That's their grandparents and coming down. The other before is the history of how the Bharata was spoken. Right? Just like in the Bhagavatam, then the sages ask, how did the Bhagavatam come to be spoken? So we see the Bhagavatam actually starts in the second canto. Right? When Maharaj, or let's say the 19th chapter of the first canto, the last chapter. When Sukadeva Goswami comes to the assembly of the sages and Maharaj Parikit asks him his questions. Then he starts speaking the Bhagavatam in the second canto, first verse. Right? So, but before that, the whole history of how that came to be then is brought about. So you get the history of the Pandavas and how the Bhagavatam was, you know, decided to be written and the whole thing, the sages at Naimisharanya. All that is then detailed, right, in one whole canto. So in the same way is how did the Bharata become to be spoken? It was spoken because of the snake sacrifice. So at the snake sacrifice, then the Bharata was the topic of discussion. So then the question would come, well, how did the snake sacrifice? Why was there a snake sacrifice? Then that's the whole, you know, first part of this Adiparva, right? Like that. Okay? Men of learning display their various knowledge of the institutes in commenting on the composition. Some are skillful in explaining it, while others in remembering its contents. Right? I mean, some will read it and remember all the stories. So at any time you can ask them, tell us a story, and then they can bring out the stories very nicely, and that's very nice, yes? Was Ananta Sesh at the sacrifice? Was he? No. Because it started with all the bad snakes. So all the small-time snakes. See, Ananta, it'll come up later, but just as a thing, is Ananta, when the snakes behaved badly, you know, they were all envious in that, where they got cursed, then Ananta, he separated himself from the snakes. He just left the whole family and has nothing to do with them. So even though he's the oldest, then he left, and that means the, who's it? The rope walla? Vasuki, who's number two snake of the celestial snakes, he actually becomes the senior snake. Right? And then Takshuka, he's number three. Right? So this way he becomes two. Does that make sense? So the problem is Takshuka has it's been cursed that Parikit will be bitten by Takshuka. So then it's arranged, well, there'll be a snake sacrifice so that it means to get back at Takshuka because he was actually improper in his, you know, biting of this. He didn't need to do this. Right? like that. That discussion will come up later on the justice of whether Tatrika was correct or not in biting Parikshit. Yeah? So it had gotten to the point where it was starting to pull Tatrika, right, into the fire. And at that time, then Astika, then he comes and takes care of things. Yeah? But Ananta, he's not even part of the circle. So he left and he went to Vishnu and got a job holding up the universe, right? Like that. Because see, these elephants are there holding everything up, holding up the earth. But elephants are elephants, so every now and again they move, right? And so when they move, then you get earthquakes. So there were too many earthquakes. So then it was requested that Ananta, he also hold things up so that it makes it a little bit more stable, so there's less earthquakes. Yeah? Okay. Oh, and then others are skillful in explaining. It means you say the story, they can explain what's going on, but if you ask them 10 minutes later what the story is, they may or may not remember. Okay, so you have mentions, you basically have those two kinds of persons that discuss the Mahabharata. The son of Satyavati, having by penance and meditation analyzed the eternal Veda, afterwards composed this holy history, when that learned Brahmarshi of strict vows, the noble Dvaipayana Vyas, offspring of Parasara, had finished this greatest of narrations, he began to consider how he might teach it to his disciples. And the possessor of six attributes, Brahma, the world's preceptor, knowing of the anxiety of the Rishi Dvaipayana, came in person to the place where the latter was, for gratifying the saint and benefiting the people. And when Vyasa, surrounded by all the tribes of Munis, saw him, he was surprised. And standing with joined palms, he bowed and ordered a seat to be brought. And Vyas, having gone around him, who is called Hiranyagarbha, seated on that distinguished seat, stood near it. And being commanded by Brahma Parameshti, he sat down near the seat, full of affection and smiling in joy. Then the great, the glorious Vyas, addressing Brahma Parameshti, said, O divine Brahma, by me a poem hath been composed, which is greatly respected. It's working? Oh, it's coming. Can you hear now? Greatly respected. The mystery of the Veda and other subjects has been explained by me. The various rituals of the Upanishads with the Angas, the compilation of the Puranas and history formed by me and named after the three divisions of time, past, present, and future. The determination of the nature of decay, fear, disease, existence, and non-existence. A description of creeds and of the various modes of life. Rule of the four castes and the import of all the Puranas. An account of asceticism and the duties of a religious student. The dimensions of the sun and moon, planets, constellation, and stars. Together with the duration of the four ages. The Rig, Sama, Yajur, Vedas, also Adhyatma. Adhyatma means science of spiritual science. You can hear now? The science is called Nyaya. Orthophy. I don't know what that is. Treatment of diseases, charity, and Pashupata Dharma means how you deal with the animals, what's our duties with them. Birth, celestial and human, for particular purposes. Also a description of places of pilgrimage and other holy places of rivers, mountains, forests, the ocean of heavenly cities and the kalpas, the art of war, the different kinds of nations and languages, the nature of the manners of people and the all-pervading spirit. All these have been represented, but after all, No writer of this work is to be found on earth. I seem to turn it.
What?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. That's, it's better. I mean, as long as it's not direct, that's all. Okay. So, basically we can see is that everything that there is in the Veda and the essence of it has been written into the Mahabharata. Right? But in giving all that detail, then we see that one defect is there, even though it's very educational. But the real spiritual essence, because so much culture is being given in detail, that the pure transcendental understanding may be missed by the reader. Right? It's there, but your general reader will miss that because it's not direct enough. Right? It's a common thing. If you say something nicely, pleasantly, then it may or may not be caught. Right? So that means you have to make it very clear and direct. Does that make sense? But when you make it very clear and direct, generally you're moving out, you move into the intellectual level. And the intellectual level then, if it's an intellectual environment, like a class, you take all the instructions seriously. But if it's put into the framework of an emotional environment, intellectual things don't compute. Does that make sense? You understand? Means we're interacting on some kind of level of emotions and that kind of interaction. Then suddenly I say something intellectual in the middle of it. Generally it doesn't register. Does that make sense? It's just the nature of how it is. So one has to be aware of this. So Vyasadeva is pointing that out, that you need to make that very clear. So therefore Srimad Bhagavatam was written. That makes it very clear that worshipping Godhead, developing love for Godhead, is the ultimate goal. And all these other cultural aspects are important for the human society, but only for the purpose to perfect that love for Godhead. Right? Other aspects are not very important. Does this make sense? So you always have to be very, very careful in explaining that it's clear that this is something important. And we always must be aware to try to understand what's going on by studying and understanding its application of the detail or the abridgment. Does that make sense? Right? We may be hearing a very elaborate story, but we're trying to find out what's actually the essence, what's actually going on. Does that make sense? So it goes both ways. At the same time as those who are explaining it, explain it, but they always have to try to see that you're catching actually the point. Does that make sense? Okay. So now, he's written this, but this is a very vast work. Right? Here is the Rig Veda is 10,000 verses. Right, Yajurveda is about 8. Atharva, I think, is about between 5 and 6. Samaveda is about 1,300. And these are considered big works. Right? Bhagavatam, we see, is a big book. Right? You've all seen a Bhagavatam set. That's 18,000 verses. So here we're looking at 100,000. Right? So that's five times the size, or a little bit more than that, of the Bhagavatam sitting on the shelf. Right? And as we'll learn, it didn't start as 5,100. That means it started there, but it went to 600,000. Right? The details are there. But what is spoken here is the 100,000. This is the more, how you say, human compliant form. So now he asked Brahma, who can help me write this? Because I can speak it, someone has to write it down. Same problem. Brahma said, I esteem for thee thy knowledge of divine mysteries. Before the whole body of celebrated munis, distinguished for the sanctity of their lives. I know thou hast revealed the divine word, even from its first utterance, in the language of truth. Thou hast called thy present work a poem, therefore it shall be a poem. There shall be no poets whose works may equal the descriptions of this poem. Even as the three other modes, called ashrama, are ever unequal in merit to the domestic ashram, let Ganesh be thought of, O Muni, for the purpose of writing the poem. Sauti said, Brahma, having thus spoken to Vyas, retired to his own abode. Okay. So we see here is that he's saying, yes. What was that? Someone can say it loudly? Rig Veda and Sama Veda about. Basically, I can give you a very general answer. It's a lot of, also like in Bhagavatam, stories and all that, and discussions between various persons that basically describe the essence of all, you know, of knowledge. But it doesn't have the form like the Purana, that it has to have creation, secondary creation, Prajapatis, Manus, and kings, right? So that's why it's not a Purana, right? But it's the same kind of knowledge. But the difference of the Veda is that the Veda is what's called apurusheya. It is unspoken, right? Apurusheya means it's eternal. The Shruti, there's a time when it's spoken, right? Those who study the Veda, then in their application of it, then they, when questioned by others, give their experience, right? Does that make sense? I studied the Veda. I apply it in my life. Someone comes to me and says, can you explain to me this? So then I'll explain it to them, the Veda, using the examples that I've been through or examples I've heard of others giving. Right? So that's how the stories will work. Does that make sense? But the Veda is not like that. It's always there. Just it becomes manifest where we can see it, or it's not manifest where we can't see it, because it's always going on. Does that make sense? Yeah. But it will be one of our classes to go through the four Vedas and know what's in them. Yes?
And you can also summarize that Rig Veda, it gives us Sambandha, yeah? It gives us different descriptions and glorifications of the different deities, Vedic deities. Then the Yajur Veda, they are there at this with the different sacrifices recommend in the Vedas. And Sama Veda, the Vyajana Veda,
composed of different pleasing hymns. Mm. Okay. Yes? The Rig, Yajra, and Sama are like Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. It's giving the Vedic knowledge, but from that angle. But they use the medium of, Rig uses the medium of describing the various deities that are there, you know, Indra, this, that. So you have all the hymns to all these different persons. Yajur is like the Abhideya, it gives the process that you perform sacrifice, because the Vedic is the yajna. Perform sacrifice to these deities. And then the Sama will be various, these songs, these prayers to those deities. right? And the Atharva will be all the miscellaneous things that don't really fit into all those other three, but are supportive of that. So in there you'll get details of war and diplomacy and you name it. It's in there. It's like a compendium of just various branches of knowledge. So that's why before you could study just the Vedas and the Upavedas and have all the knowledge like that, because it's all there. But then someone has to really explain it. So persons have then written treatises on those four Vedas, of the details of that, and that you get all the Shrutis. You know, like someone like Varahamihira has written on astrology. But that will already be there in the Veda. Right? Does that make sense? And then, like that, then you get... So, some people only accept the Veda because it's complete in its knowledge. But without a very excellent teacher, you won't understand it. And so, and even you have an excellent teacher, unless you're an excellent student, you may not catch it. So then, the Shruti has been written so that the knowledge can be more easily given to others. Yeah?
Vedas are Smriti?
Vedas are Smriti, yeah. No, they're Shruti. That is Smriti. And the others are Smriti, excuse me. Shruti means what is heard. And Smriti, what is remembered. So Smriti is also known as tradition. Right? So Smriti is what some great sages have spoken and what they practice. Right? That's technically Smriti. So you have... they say. You have the Veda itself, which is the knowledge. Then you have the Shruti. Then you have the Smriti, which are those books written on that. Let's say like Manusamhita or this Mahabharata. These are Smritis. And we see in them are the example of great personalities. In other words, their understanding of the Veda, how they live it in their life, that is the example given in the Smriti. Right? Then we have around us then senior devotees, the Brahmins and senior devotees, who they themselves then following that Shruti and Smriti, they practice their life. And so between these three, then that's how we judge what's right and wrong, right? Then because there's so many aspects of the mode of life, right? Then we see what works for us, right? In other words, at the end, you have to be able to practically apply it in your life. So the final consideration is what you're comfortable with, right? But what you choose for being comfortable with is from the Shruti and the Smriti, right? You don't make it up. Does that make sense? So, like that. It's not that when we... So, this is the problem, is like we were talking before, the duality. So here's another, basically, you know, contemporary problem. It happens in the Vedic also, but it's a mundane, let's better to put it, it's a mundane approach. Is that I follow the rule, I follow, you know, the scripture says this has to be done. So, the Shruti says it, Smriti says it, I see the great personalities doing it, so this is what's done. But it may or may not be particularly applicable to yourself, that aspect. So then to counter that, so that problem doesn't arise, then you have others that what's important is just what is comfortable for you. What you like to do, do that. But in both of these there's a weakness, because the one is you're following the scriptures, that's correct, but you're not properly applying it to yourself. That's the incorrectness. The other one is they try to properly apply it to the individual, but what are you going to apply? You'd have to make it up. So whatever you feel like, that's what you do. But you know, that's not the way it is. I mean, would the mother sit there and go, you know, while the big nasty dog comes over and bites her child, and then the child says, you know, why did that you allow that to happen? Oh, the dog, he wanted to bite you, you know, so I didn't want to stop him and, you know, not allow him to, you know, express himself, his dogness. Would any mother do that? No, the dog comes over, she whacks the dog. Right? So, that's the point, is that it's not real. This so-called modern liberal perspective actually isn't real. The concept of applying it to the individual, that's very real. But doing it in a speculative way where the options that you choose to apply to the individual are not standard coming from Shastra and tradition, that's nonsense. Right? Otherwise, everybody comes up with a different idea, and then how do you communicate? How do you have community? Right? Community means everybody's working off the same standards. Then you apply them to yourself. Right? Does that make sense? It'd be like this. You have the Brahmins, right? I mean, okay, you have the Vedas. In the Vedas, then the point being made is don't be too absorbed in the material world, right? So then if you're not too absorbed in the material world, you don't want to get too busy with things. So it recommends for a man who is interested in spiritual development, then he either fully shaves his head or he doesn't bother at all, right? In other words, he doesn't just, you know, do this portion or that portion, or, you know, he wants to keep a beard, so then he shaves under here so it doesn't look too rough, and then claims, oh yes, I look like a sadhu, you know, stuff like that. You know, either you shave it or you don't shave it, right? So now you would have some that would say, you know, you have to shave it, because that's, you know, what is done, and not shaving it, that's nonsense. Others would, may say, oh, not shaving it, that's fine, and why are you so fanatic that you have to shave it? So then you have two parties that fight with each other. But we see in the Vedic culture, you have those who are shaved and those who are not. And nobody cares. Because the ones that are shaved, they're the ones that are dealing with the deities and yajnas and those kind of things. And the ones that are not shaved are the ones that are living out in the forest with the tiger, lions, tigers, and bears. Right? So, if they meet each other, it's not like, well, he shaves his head, what a fanatic. And the other guy, what a weirdo, he doesn't shave. You know what I'm saying? They don't have a problem. You know what I'm saying? So, that's why in the Vedic culture, there is variety. Right? People will say there's no variety, but you name me one fashion house in the world that has as much variety in cloth as any one of them in India that makes saris. Name me one. No one can. You go into a sari shop, they got more variety of anything than the biggest, you know, shop in the world. Nobody has like that. You know what I'm saying? So, it has the most variety, but it's based on tradition. You know, that's important. Because the living entity needs variety, but that variety shouldn't be speculative. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's, you'll see in the Vedic cultures, that's the science. The science is knowing what are all the elements and how they can be combined. That way you could come up with unlimited variety. Then, according to your ability in applying that science, that we call the art, then someone has greater capacity, someone has lesser capacity. But in any case, variety is there. Does that make sense? Yes. Uh-huh. What is Vedic culture? Ah, a very good question. This has been, perplexing many personages, you know, up even till today. So, what we will give is a non-political, non-aligned answer, right? There's no specific political agenda to be gained from this. Okay, in essence, Vedic culture means would be the social structure of, let us say it would be the value system and lifestyle of the individual and collective group of individuals who the knowledge of the Vedas and the goal of the Vedas is what they want. Does that make sense? Right?
Could you say that again, sir?
Can I say it again so you can write it down? You're not supposed to be writing while I'm saying? She asked for a definition of Vedic culture. That means you're going to get a definition. So you don't sit there and listen and go, hey, this is a definition. And then, you understand? You got to be sharp. That's why the idea of taking notes is that you start to become sharp what's important that you have to take down and what's not. In practice, you'll get it. But what I'm saying is be more aware. Because now it's time to move to the expansion of that. But the basic point is the Vedic culture will be the lifestyle of those who follow the Vedas, we could say. Okay? So that's quite broad. That's why it becomes confusing. It's like this. You have the knowledge. Okay, here's the next step. You have the knowledge, Vedic knowledge, right? Or the Vedic philosophy, which is Mimamsa, the interpretation. Then you have the application of that philosophy into your life, right? Because philosophy should be applied. That becomes culture, right? So now, here comes the difference, right? You'll see a very clear point here. Those, Prabhupada says, religion, well, that means the culture. Religion without philosophy is sentiment. Right? And philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Okay? So now what we find is there's a group of persons who follow the Vedic culture because the culture is one. You understand? The Vedic culture is one culture. And there may be slight variations in it. You know, like certain spicings, what they emphasize, or it's more wet or more dry, or a particular order of serving things, or the colors or patterns that they use in their cloth. But the mood of it, how you serve, how you host someone, how you interact, that's the same. Anyone who follows the Vedic culture, it's the same. Does that make sense? But you'll find that if they only go that far, then they are bewildered when it comes to philosophy. Right? So, therefore, they don't know. There's so many varieties. I don't know who's the supreme because everybody says something different, this, that. But they'll be fixed in the culture. So, for them, the culture is very clear. Philosophy is very unclear. Right? So, those are persons who practice religion without philosophy. Right? And the easiest is you just say it's all one, so then you don't have to worry about philosophy, because whatever anybody says, hey, that's all right. Right? Then the other is they know the philosophy very well, exact. You can ask anybody in that group, and all of them can tell you the philosophy perfectly. But when it comes to culture, they're totally bewildered. Completely speculative. Does that make sense? So that's why this question, it's a good question, but why generally it can't be answered? Because the answer can only be understood by people who actually connect the philosophy to their life, day-to-day life. Understand? They can understand what culture is. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah. Okay.
So if in a society, all the individuals have Krishna as their common value, as their common goal, then there is no problem in society.
If you have Krishna, if you have persons who Krishna is their common goal, you won't have any. Will you not have problem in society? Basically speaking, no, because the philosophy is the most important. But you'll find socially, yes, they'll have problems, because socially, it's like this: you either accept the Vedic culture, which is universal, or you'll have to follow some regional culture. And regional, I don't mean India. Regional, I mean outside of India. India is based on the Vedic culture. Right? You have details that are specific for a region, that's not important. The main points, that's important. But otherwise, then you will, even though you're a devotee, you will act like an American, or someone from Britain, or from continental Europe, or Asia, or Africa, or South America, like this. You'll act like that because that's your culture. And so you'll take that philosophy, apply it into that culture. It will work. And if you have people from the same place, it'll work better. But when you have a place where everybody's from all different cultures, then you'll have problems. Because they can't relate to each other, right? You know what I'm saying? So like that, you'll have all these difficulties. That's why the Vedic is the most best to use, because it works for everybody. Because it actually is the essence of all cultures. But in applying it, then you have to be very careful, is that even though you may follow the detail, you present to others who are not at that same platform of commitment, only the principle, not the detail. Right? Just like, okay, we cook basically Indian food, or let's say even more specifically, Bengali food, right? But we're traveling and preaching. But the important thing is that you cook something and offer it to God, right? Not that it has to be Bengali cooking, right? That would be a detail, and by presenting that or emphasizing that, the other person would be uncomfortable, right? But they cooked something already because they're eating, right? And so then they can offer that to God. Does that make sense? And so they start from there. After a while, then they might, you know, then try to ask, well, what does God like to eat? You know what I'm saying? Then it might change. But if not, then it doesn't matter, because they're offering their food to God. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what it means. In other words, those points that are universal, those things are followed. You know, just like in dress. The Vedic dress is that of cultured persons. Right? So it's simple, it's clean, it's refined, it's aesthetic. Right? It's practical. So it has all those elements to it. So if you don't want to wear what is the Vedic traditional clothes, you want to wear something else, but it has to fit into that criteria. Right? Does that make sense? So that means you understand actually the culture. If not, then what happens is you'll just drop back into what is your culture before. You came from the street, you'll go back to the street. Right? You came from a wealthy background, you'll go back to a wealthy background. Right? Punar Musika Baba. Wherever you left the material world from and came into Krishna consciousness, no matter how much you advance and how refined you get, when you leave it, you'll go right back to where you were. Does that make sense? People will think, oh, I've become so developed and refined, if I leave the movement, I will be like that. No, they'll go right back to. Right? It means I've seen it. It's just obvious. If one is seen, then you just see. People just go right back to where they were, because that's what they know. So that's the whole idea, is you want to replace that culture. Right? Then that becomes your lifestyle, your practice. Then no matter where you are, what situation, it will remain. Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Okay. Sauti said, okay. Then Vyas began to call to mind Ganesh, and Ganesh, obviator of obstacles, ready to fulfill the desires of his votaries, was no sooner thought of than he repaired to the place where Vyas was seated. And when he had been saluted and was seated, Vyas addressed him thus, O guide of the Ganas, be thou the writer of the Bharata, which I have formed in my imagination, and which I am about to repeat. Ganesh, upon hearing this address, thus answered, I will become the writer of thy work, provided my pen do not for a moment cease writing. And Vyas said unto that divinity, wherever there be anything thou dost not comprehend, cease to continue writing. Ganesh, having signified his assent by repeating the word Om, proceeded to write. And Vyas began, and by way of diversion, he knit the knots of composition exceedingly close. By doing which, he dictated his work according to his engagement. Right? Means Vyas thought of, according to Brahma's direction, Vyas thought of Ganesh. Ganesh came. He asked Ganesh to write the work down. He said he would as long as he didn't have to stop writing. Means, in other words, as long as you speak, I write. You stop speaking, I stop writing. That's it. I walk off. Vyas said, no problem, but you can only write down what you understand. So therefore, at certain points where it took some more technical things, and Vyasadeva would speak it in such a complex way that Ganesh would have to stop for a moment to think before he wrote, and that would give Vyasadeva time to then compose the next set of verses. Yeah? Okay. So then we'll continue today's what? Friday? We'll continue on Monday. Jai Ho. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Follow the stupid advice of your friends and how to deal with a woman. Do you know it's one of the most annoying things to women? Is that you're dealing with them how that guy would deal with his women or how he thinks he should. It's one of the biggest mistakes you can ever make. And the community over there, that's all they do. And you just add it up. How many people over there are married? How many people over there still have a husband or a wife? And then you figure out, if that's the people you want to learn from how to behave, the choice is yours. Because if you have a hellish grihastha life, it's your problem, not mine. You understand? So if you don't learn to be a brahmachari, you'll never be a grihastha. Right? Because you have to be sense control. You have to have a very good service. You hate washing pots here. What are you going to do when your house is full of pots? You think your wife's always going to wash the pots? You know? You think it's just going to happen by magic? Now you're at your house. What? Your mother does everything. She cooks, she washes the pots, she cleans the floor, she washes your clothes, she does everything for you. You think your wife's going to do that? So if you can't wash the pots here, you can't cook, you can't clean, then you're going to be a disgusting, terrible grihastha like so many others who wouldn't have a clue how to deal with a woman, how to satisfy them, how to make anything work. Because women do not like lazy bums. Right? Being cute, being cool is not enough. It may be fun, it's exciting, you get some interaction, but when things get real, they're looking for a man. They're not looking for a punk. Does that make sense? So, you're a day student, you are over there, you're going to be interacting with those people, fine. But why not stay yourself? Why do you have to become like them? Right? They're not becoming like you, so why you become like them? You know what I'm saying? And you may say it's not possible. I also grew up in, you know, this kind of culture. Even worse, they weren't devotees. They were karmis. I dressed the way I wanted to dress. I couldn't care less what the fashion was or what anyone else did. So therefore, I can very clearly say it can be done. You can't say, well, it's not practical or you don't know. Tell them, you know, hey, wake up. We were also punk teenagers at one point also, believe it or not. Yeah, it was somewhere between, what was it? You know, I think Homo erectus and Neanderthal sometime back then, but it did happen. Right? I think somewhere between Ice Age 1 and Ice Age 2. You understand? So, therefore, be a little careful. Because the point is the one that you, I mean, we may get annoyed, but the one that you actually mess around is yourself. You know what I'm saying? That's the one that you hurt, not us. You may be very clever, but in the long run, it's not so smart. Right? So you may be really clever and get out of doing things and, you know, what the teachers ask and what you're supposed to do. You know, because you're sitting here and they're sitting over there. But if you're living with a woman, you're not that clever. Women are 4 times more clever than men. So whatever cleverness you're trying to do, they'll understand. Right? So you have to understand what you're up against. So if you're not smart, you're not sense-controlled, you're not sensitive to actually understand what other people need, you're not going to make it. That's the reality. Right? Does that make sense? That's what makes it or breaks it in the material world. Right? Because if your relationships don't work, what's the use of your money, your position, everything? Does that make sense? So therefore, the character is the most important thing. Having values, doing. What we're doing here, what we're giving you is not, we didn't sit around, right, you know, and dream up, oh, what can we do to really annoy the boys? Oh, well, let's see, what can we do? Let's see, hey, what about washing pots? Yeah, yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, make them wash pots. Hey, I'll show their clothes and their, really rub it in, you know, by making them clean the toilets and the drains. Ooh, yeah, hey, this is great. The kids will hate it. Oh. Right? This is not Calvin and Hobbes. You know? You understand? Means you are here. This lifestyle is what we're going to live. You're not here. We're going to live exactly the same thing. You know what I'm saying? How are we teaching you to cook? That's how we cook. It's not that when you guys aren't here, then we go, hurry up, now we can cook something tasty and good, you know, like this, you know? You know, or when you guys go out, then, you know, we push a button and, you know, the floor opens up. We go down into this, you know, cellar and, you know, the music's happening. You know, it's all, you know, it's not like that. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that this is a lifestyle that we value. And so it's just a matter, if you want to be part of it and learn it also, great. And if you don't, hey, there's plenty of other people to tell you all the kinds of stuff that you're supposed to do. And so if you want, hey, they're all out there. But if you want to be yourself and you want to get somewhere and be happy, that's a different topic altogether. Right? It's a separate topic. It has nothing to do with the other ones. Does that make sense? So therefore, you're trained. So they maintain that. You know what I'm saying? The point is why come to this school if you don't want to do it? It's like, why go to a music school if you're not interested in music? Right? If you're not planning when you finish music school that music's going to be a major part of your life, either professionally or as a hobby, serious hobby, why would you go to music school? You know, actually, I wanted to be a lawyer. You know, why would you do that? Then you go to a law school. So you come to here because this is the lifestyle you want to live and this is what you want to do. Right? So then you do it. Does that make sense? You're going to have plenty of time to not do this later. Right? You ask any grihastha, can they just go off and do whatever they want whenever they want? Right? They can't. It's all these men here, these responsible men here, they would love to be studying this and that and go do things and that. They can't because they have responsibilities. It's not that they're not happy with their responsibilities. That's their choice. So therefore, that takes preference over their own personal needs. But they would love to study more and do this and that and so many things. But they can't because they have to maintain the family, take care, put in time, everything like that. So now all you have to do is study and learn. And you want to waste it socializing and doing other stupidities? Right? Does that make sense? So, why do that? It's just like this. Let us say you're really hungry. Okay? Now, what would be the smart thing to do? Go to a glass window where there's something to eat there and then press your nose against it and go, Or, you know, go out, get some money, go to the market, buy the stuff, take it home, cut it up, cook it, and then eat it. Which of the two? The second one. Okay. So then why would it be smart if you want to be involved at some point with women? Would you just sit around and look at them and look at, you know, and giggle at them and try to get little attention from them when that's all you can get? You can't get anything else. You understand? When you get married, then you can live with them, talk to them, touch them, interact with them, whatever you want. Now you can't do any of that. And if you do, you'll get your butt kicked. You understand? So why bother? Now you can learn. Later you can't. Later you can interact with the ladies. Now you can't. Use your brains. Put the two together. Does that make sense?